Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Big Rapids, Michigan, and earned a BA degree in political science from Hope College. Since 2001, he's been the executive director of the Michigan Family Forum. Its mission is to stimulate cultural renewal by strengthening Michigan families through public advocacy, education, and collaboration. An advocate for families, his name, Brad Snavely, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Brad Snavely, the executive director of the Michigan Family Forum. Brad, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Jack. Thank you for having me.
Can we start by talking about your parents and your childhood?
Yeah, absolutely. Grew up in Big Rapids, Michigan, as you indicated, and just one brother in a small town America. Loved sports. Love school, probably sports more than school, honestly, and even more than music, even though my mother would be disappointed to hear that as a music teacher. But yeah, my father worked for the post office, and my mom was a music teacher, and really had a great, I think, small-town upbringing.
What's the biggest thing, Brad, you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, I think for my mom, certainly an appreciation for music. And a love for the church. She played and sang in church since she was a little girl, and so we enjoyed going to church together, and we enjoyed singing together, my brother and I, and my mom. So she taught me music. She taught me to care for elderly people. We would visit them frequently in nursing homes, and I remember as a child not looking forward to that, but looking back on it now, I really value those times, and that she placed significance on that. So those are the things that stand out for Mom.
How about Dad?
Well, with my dad, I learned, I think, a love of reading. My dad would come home from work and put his feet up, and he would always read papers. He would read two or three papers a day. And some of my fondest memories are after school, coming home with Dad, and reading the sports page, reading the Free Press and the news and the box scores for the Tigers. And but I did develop a love of reading, particularly newspapers, and a love of sports from my dad.
Brad, what and how did your mom and dad teach you about marriage?
Well, I think, you know, just the stability that was provided and the value there. I mean, there was never any talk, even through hard times, of divorce or splitting up. And so I saw in them a real willingness to work through issues and really have a focus together for the children, for my brother and I, for our best interest, and a sacrifice for our interest. And so I think that what I caught early on was that in terms of the way Mom and Dad view life, it's not about them per se, but it's about the family, and it's about giving their boys opportunities to succeed in life and experiences that were valuable to us.
Through the years, Brad, we've had a lot of great guests who are graduates of Hope College. Tiny little college. What makes Hope College so special?
You know, I think a number of things, but to me, what really stands out about Hope College, and I'm in it from a unique perspective because I was a first-generation Hope student and graduated in my family, but my son just graduated from Hope in May, and so I can see it through his eyes as well. And I think one thing that sets Hope apart, yes, academic excellence, yes, opportunities for spiritual growth and sports and the arts, But the professors there, I do believe, take a strong personal interest in the students. And I experienced that. I've seen that in my son's experience there. So I think what you get at Hope, and I'm a little partial, I'm sure other schools do this as well, but the professors really do take an interest in the students outside of the classroom. And I remember one of my management professors inviting me up to his office after class and just said, you know, Brad, what do you want to do with your life? And we talked about, you know, opportunities that he saw, you know, some of the skills that I had, and what was I thinking, you know, a year out from graduation? And those sorts of things, I think, are very valuable.
For 20-plus years, Brad, you've interfaced with politicians and legislatures. Tell us about the people who make up our legislatures.
Well, that's a fascinating question. And one of the things I've loved about having a career as a lobbyist or a, you know, a public policy advocate is that, you know, I get to meet people serving from all across the state. And having done this for over 20 years, I would say the representatives and the senators that represent their area tend to reflect the values, the attitudes, the people that elect them. Now, sometimes that's not true, but most often it is true. So there's great diversity among the legislature, particularly the House of Representatives, where you might be talking to an attorney who's had a very successful career, is taking a break from that to serve. There might be a farmer, there might be a teacher. As many professions as you might imagine, a hardware store owner, a retired state trooper. I mean, it's fascinating. One of the things I've loved about my jobs over the years is just getting to know these fascinating people.
Were there one or two that stood out above all the others?
That would be really hard. I mean, now that term limits has come into effect, you know, every 6 years or less, you have new people in the House. So it would be hard for me to cite a couple of people out of so many. But I guess what I would say to you is this. I've been wonderfully surprised to have friendships on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. Even though the organization that I represent now tends to be more on the conservative side, and I represented other interests in the past, but I've loved the chance to get to know people who don't necessarily think like me or have the same political philosophy that I do, and maybe diametrically opposed to the interests that I'm representing. But it's a wonderful opportunity, really, to get to know them and to get to know how they come to their conclusions. And so it's neat when you can have friendships even though you disagree on issues.
We're talking to Brad Sinaverly. When we come back, we'll ask him how it was he got involved with Michigan Family Forum. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Brad Sinaverly, who's an advocate for families and also executive director of the Michigan Family Forum. Brad, how did you get involved with the forum?
Well, I've had an interest in public policy my whole life. And even as a college student, I thought, you know, I really, it's fascinating to think about what a lobbyist does. You know, they're representing interests, but they're there building relationships and they're an advocate for a cause. And so I was always an advocate for a cause, but I always felt that if I could be an advocate for the family, that would be something that I would really enjoy, because I think the family is so important, not only for children and the adults, but for our communities and our country. And without strong families, we really struggle to remain free. We struggle to succeed economically and in the classroom. And so I think it's one of those just fundamental areas that we can do better, you know, in terms of our family policy. So I've kind of combined my interest in politics and legislative affairs and public policy with my strong passion for the family.
Tell us, Brad, about the Michigan Family Forum.
Well, we exist to strengthen the family. And our goal is to try to create public policy that allows for more children to grow up with a mom and a dad in their life, preferably a married mom and dad. And I think if we could do that, that simple thing as a public policy goal, I think a lot of our problems would be helped, because that's just a core issue. So that takes us down a lot of roads, but particularly marriage, things that would strengthen marriage, things that would encourage responsible fatherhood, things that would protect vulnerable children, and certainly things that would honor our elders. And we can talk about that a little bit later, but there's a role for the family in caring for our elderly citizens as well.
Talk to us, Brad, about the quote-unquote fragmentation of the family.
Well, we've seen this happening really over the course of my lifetime. I was born in 1965, but throughout the decades of the 60s and 70s, we've seen the family sort of come apart. You know, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, a senator from New York, upon his retirement said that the greatest change in his public life was the absolute breakdown of the family all over North America. And it's true. And so we're starting to suffer some of the consequences from that. And so fragmenting of the family, it really means losing that ideal, you know, having more people grow up in a home without a married mom and dad, whether that be through divorce or a child that is born outside of marriage. There's just been a sort of a pulling away of childbearing and child raising from the institution of marriage. And I think that has very negative effects on society.
47% of all first births in Michigan are to unwed mothers. Brad, many would say, we don't really need the family anymore. Women can earn just as much as men. With the advances and everything, we don't need families to raise kids.
Well, I would answer that this way, that we hope that those children who are born outside of marriage, we hope they beat the odds and we hope they're successful. But we know from social scientific research that they're less likely to succeed and have opportunities. I mean, that's just a reality. So as part of public policy, I mean, we need to have two things in mind. We need to care for and have support for those children who are born into those situations, because it's not their fault, right? But at the same time, we must not lose sight of the goal. And the goal is to have the optimal opportunities for our children and our society. And that really means marriage. That means moms and dads, husbands and wives, committing themselves to one another and jointly to that child. That is the gold standard. And we must continue to strive for that. And I think that we're kidding ourselves if we make a choice and we say, I think this child can be raised in a home without a father and not have any negative influences now in their life. Now, we hope that will happen. I mean, I'm not here to say I hope all these kids do very well, and we need to be involved in mentoring and help them. But I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that children can do just as well in life and have no deficits whatsoever without the influence of a mom and a dad. It's very difficult to do.
One Sunday a year, we honor dads. What do dads and fathers give to their children, Brad Snavely?
Well, they give them a lot, but particularly uniquely, studies have shown that dads are more prone to help children develop a healthy risk-taking, for example. Dads tend to be not as high and nurturing, but more on the side of risk-taking, more on the side of climbing that tree and don't worry about falling. You can do it. Now, a child may fall, and mom might be horrified by that. But dad is going to encourage those children to take appropriate risks, and I think dad is going to affirm masculinity in boys and to say, you know what, I love you, I'm proud of you, you have what it takes to be a man, and by the way, here's how you be a man. Here's how you treat women in a healthy way. And dads show girls what it is to be a healthy masculine figure. And so dads are really a role model for girls to have an idea of what they may want to look for in a husband, and to show them how to cherish a young woman. And a healthy relationship with a father will do that, and do that very well.
I've heard many times, Brad, through the years, that the biggest thing a dad can do for his children is to love their mom. Why?
Well, I think that gets back to the issue of having a secure environment. If dad is loving toward the kids but unloving toward mom, or disrespectful toward mom, or we hope not, but in some cases, yes, perhaps abusive toward mom, that destroys that sense of security. But when dad loves mom, and when dad can even show the kids, I love mom so much that we're going to go away for a weekend, or we're going to have a date night, and yes, I love to be with you, but we're going to have a babysitter because my relationship with mom is so important. And we're in this together as a family. That brings an awesome sense of security to a child to know that, hey, mom and dad are in this together, and they love me so much that they're taking time to build a strong relationship so they can be a team as parents for us as kids.
We're talking to Brad Snavely, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Prasula, and we're with Brad Snavely. If you want to learn more, www.michiganfamily.org. Brad, we talked about dads and what they give to children. Equal time, what do moms give to children?
Well, moms, as you know, are tremendously influential. And one of the things that most women really excel in is this area of being intuitive in relationships. And I think that what a mom can give to her children is a sensitivity toward relationships and understanding the power of words and how you relate to other people. Because as men, I mean, sometimes I'll just admit this, in our family, I'm oblivious to something I said or didn't say, and my wife will say, you know, when you said that, they reacted this way, couldn't you tell? And I would say, no, I really can't. But that's something that I think moms really excel in, is helping children with their relationships. The other thing that studies have shown is that it's with moral formation. Moms tend to be more spiritually sensitive. And that's not to say men shouldn't. Men should be, and men are, but it's a different level with women, the studies found with mothers. So I think in terms of how you relate to other people, developing that sensitivity and developing a sense of a moral foundation, learning right from wrong, whereas dads might be more on the discipline side, learning self-control, mom might be there on the heart issues. Yeah, a little bit more than dad, and that's very significant.
Ken Blanchard's written a lot of great books. A recent one is Lead Your Family Like Jesus, 12 Principles from the Creator of Families. And every company, every entity has a culture, a mission, but right. He talks about a family having a mission and taking that on as a family. Talk to us about a family's mission.
Well, I think this is very important, especially in our modern culture, where we tend to be driven by activities. And so every child has a different activity, and we find ourselves as families going in 8 different directions throughout the week. And yet there needs to be some sort of coalescing around, whether that be Sundays going to church, or whether that be things you do as a family to say, you know, our family, we are going to serve. You know, we're going to serve at the soup kitchen. This is a value. We're going to be hospitable. We're going to invite people to our home, you know, once a month, and it's going to be a family thing, and we're going to serve together. When families can do that, I think it builds a tremendous sense of identity in the kids and makes them feel like they're part of something special. And I think the danger in modern society is parents, in being well-intentioned and wanting to give their kids every opportunity, will overload the schedule. And if they have three kids, they might each have four different activities. And we find ourselves running to activities rather than having time together, eating meals together, talking about, you know, the important things in life as a family. And so I think there needs to be some balance there. And I love the way Mr. Blanchard brings that out in the book.
Another chapter is entitled, Follow Me, Inspire Obedience, Not Rebellion. And with a lot of families today, it's outright rebellion. How do you do that?
Well, I think the first thing, and this is just from personal experience, is that I found my kids range from 22 all the way down to 6. I have 5 kids. But they tend to watch me, and I suppose my wife, closer than we think. And so we need to be living authentically. We need our actions to really match up with our words. And when we are walking authentically in our faith or what we say is important to us, when we're living that out, our children then want to follow that when we're in relationship, authentic relationship. When we say one thing and we may do another for whatever reason, I think that starts to break down and kids want boundaries. I think they want discipline, but I think they also, they need to see it lived out in our life. So this is one as parents where we've got to look in the mirror and we've got to ask God for help to really live out the values that we hold dear because our kids are watching.
We're talking about Ken Blanchard's latest book, Lead Your Family Like Jesus, Powerful Parenting Principles from the Creator of Families. One more chapter, Say No to Ego.
Well, I think, again, this is a big thing in our culture, that we can either err on two ways with our ego. We can do things out of fear of failure and not do things, or we can do things because we want ourselves to be to get credit or to be success in somebody else's eyes, rather than saying, you know, I want my life to serve God and others. And so I think, you know, so often as a culture, we tend to just want to achieve things rather than that might be motivated by fear or pride. And I think that's something that Blanchard points out in the book that I think is very powerful for us as parents, just to do an inventory to say, what are my intentions? Why am I pursuing this job? Or why am I pursuing this degree? Or why do I hope to get this promotion? Is it for me, or do I really feel called to pursue this profession? And so our kids, again, are watching that, and I think they need to see mom and dad pursuing, you know, intentionally pursuing things that they feel called to do out of service, not necessarily for our own ego.
Brad, what do our young people want today, and what do they need today?
Wow, that's a great question. What do they want today, and what do they need today? You know, I think kids do want a sense of purpose and meaning in their life. And I do believe that a lot of what the culture is feeding them may promise that, but it's often empty. Whether that be, you know, I want to be the star of the next reality show, or I want to make lots of money, even though there maybe not be anything wrong with that. But that's just your goal, then that's going to be empty and hollow. And so I think what parents can give kids that they do really need is a sense of security, a sense of values, a sense of purpose for their life. Big picture purpose, maybe help them develop their calling. If they have a gift in the sciences, you know, helping that child develop that gift and maybe be a surgeon or a physician or some other healthcare professional or whatever else it may be. But I think kids, you know, in the internet age, I think they do want to sort of be famous. You know, everybody can be famous. Now you can have a blog, you can be on YouTube, you can go viral. And that's part and parcel of being an adolescent, I think, that just to want that attention. But I think what kids really need and what they really long for deep down is a sense of purpose and a sense that they were created for a purpose. And helping them find that purpose and helping them persevere in pursuing that purpose is one of the great joys of being a parent.
A lot of parents today are very concerned that with the web, it's an addiction for their kids. The Facebook, the Twitter, the texting, their whole life is this web and this iPhone. What advice do you give to those parents?
Well, first of all, I would say that technology is here to stay. And so that's just something that's happened in our culture. It's the way we get information. But I think what parents need to navigate now is just the appropriate use of that technology. If you're exclusively online, if you're exclusively communicating via electronic means, you lose the ability to interact with another human being. And I think parents just need to work harder at developing that. And maybe it's that certain hours of the day, everybody, even mom and dad, turns off the electronics, at least over dinner, at least maybe, you know, an hour or two or a day where we're going to play a game or we're just going to do something where we talk. And I think that's just irreplaceable. And so I think it's not going to go away. And so as parents, we just need to learn how to navigate it, keep our kids safe, and also in the process help them to also be able to interact with human beings.
Decades ago, there was a saying that the family that prays together stays together. When we come back, we'll ask Brad Snavely about that. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Brad Snavely, Executive Director of the Michigan Family Forum. Brad, the family that prays together stays together. That was very common in the 50s, the 60s. How do I get my family to pray together today?
Well, I think one of the things is to start young. I remember when our kids were still in car seats and we would use times traveling to visit Grandma and Grandpa to just pray in the car as we went somewhere. And so we tried to make it not an unusual thing, not a rare thing, but a common thing. So that when a problem came up, and it was very natural then to just say, let's pray about that. And so I hope our kids would say to you, if they were here, that, you know, they don't remember a time when dad didn't pray with them or mom didn't pray with them. So I think starting early, and then, you know, when they go through those years, maybe where they tend to rebel, that they'll get to a point, like we all do, where we realize, you know, we don't have all the answers. But, you know, God might have the answers. And so we can humble ourselves before Him and ask God for help. And that's really not only help, but offer praises and thanksgiving when things are good. And so just cultivating that as part of a natural course of life, I think is very important.
You talk about families and how important they are, but the reality, Brad, is at least 50% of our kids are being raised by a single mom today. Talk to the single moms out there this evening.
Well, it's very hard, and I know this because I've had circumstances where my wife's been away, and I know how hard it is to be a single parent. And I would just say, number one, hang in there, and don't be afraid to ask for help, especially from men in your family, in your church, or others who can fill in for you, because it's too much for one person. Especially if you're working a job or two. And I think we as fellow citizens it's incumbent upon us to look around our place of worship, our community, and say, God, who's out there that I can help? And maybe you're at a stage in life where your kids are grown or off at college, and maybe there's a single mom that you can help on your block, in your neighborhood, from your church. And we need to be aware of that, and we need to be doing that. And I would say to single moms, there are people that want to help you. Don't be afraid to ask.
Speaking of helping other people, The fastest growing segment of our population is 85 years and older, the elderly. They're living longer than ever, but whereas they used to be heroes to us, now so many of us just ignore the elderly. Talk about helping the elderly.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of wisdom that our elderly family members have to give, both children, grandchildren, even great-grandchildren. And so what we would like to see is public policy really support those families that want to make sacrifices to organize their family and their home in such a way that they can care for that elderly family member right up until their last days. And I've seen many examples where this has been, yes, a great sacrifice, and yes, very difficult, but where the family is tremendously gratified. And I would say that you can't always do that. There is a place for that person who needs 24-hour care. But many in our society should be thinking about planning, preparing for, caring for a loved one at home. And I think our public policy should support family caregiving because it's a tremendous benefit in the intergenerational concept there where grandchildren can help care for grandma or grandpa.
If you want to learn more about Brad's organization, www.michiganfamily.org. Brad, you talk often about virtue. What does it mean for a man, a dad, to live a virtuous life?
Well, ultimately, virtue is tied into this notion and concept of character. So it means discerning right from wrong, living that out, being an example to others, self-sacrifice, humility, all those things that we would say are really great attributes. And one of the deficits I think that we're facing in society today is we've seen a decline in the family, a breakdown of the family, and we've seen the influence of religion, broadly speaking, in decline. It ebbs and flows, but right now it's sort of in a decline. And when I think about John Adams, who said, our Constitution was only created for a virtuous people. It is wholly inadequate for any other. What he was talking about is to really be free, you need virtuous people. You need self-governing, self-reliant people. The institutions that provide those people, provide or produce those kinds of people, rather, are families, strong families, and faith communities. And so the very things that we need the most right now are really sort of struggling or under attack. And so I think that we do need to pause and say, what are the institutions that really made this country great? And I think two among many, but two would be the family and our faith communities. And so we need to protect religious freedom, and we need to encourage strong families if we want to continue to be free, if we want to sustain freedom for the next generation.
A lot of people today are talking about the silent crisis of religious freedom in America. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think this is something that if you poll and you ask people, is religious freedom important, they say yes. If you ask them, is religious freedom as important or more important than this issue, another issue, a competing individual right, then the support for religious freedom goes down. And so I think what we're facing now is a crisis of what does it mean to really have religious freedom? And I think over the next decade or so particularly, we're going to really be tested on this concept. Are we truly free to live and worship as we choose, whatever faith we choose or no faith? Or are we going to say, you know, Jack, if you want to go into your church and worship however you want, that's fine, or your home, but just don't do that publicly. Now, I don't think that's the founder's view of religious freedom in America, but I think that's the debate that we're struggling with right now. There are many in society who envision a secular society where keep your faith to yourself. And I don't think that's not the notion that the founders had when they talked about religious freedom.
You're a man of courage. You live your beliefs. You're out there in the marketplace every day. And I admire you for that. A lot of listeners would say, I don't have that courage, and I don't have the platform, Brad Snavely, that you have, so I can't make a difference.
Well, I would say that you can make a difference. In fact, I would say that the listeners out there, you are the only way America will change, because it has to change first with people and the family. I would say if you're a father, and it doesn't matter if you're divorced, separated, I know fathers in prison who are still trying to maintain relationship with their child. You can reach out to your child and make a huge difference in their life. You can take a step toward them, not away from them, as a parent. You can start to teach values to your kids no matter where you are. Hopefully you're married, and hopefully you're in the context of a married household. But if you're not, you can still do that. And I would say that is the one thing that we need more than anything else, is we need parents really to transmit the values to the next generation that have made our country great. Tell those stories. Tell those stories about World War II. Tell those stories about the founders and why, what made America great. Because I think we're living in a country where children today don't have any concept of the sacrifice that has been made for them. And I think that, you know, I'm digressing here, but, you know, when I look at a film like Saving Private Ryan, we just celebrated the anniversary of D-Day, and Private Ryan, as an old man with tears running down his face, is standing at the gravesite and saying, I tried to live a life. I hope I earned what you sacrificed for me. And I think as a nation, we've been given so much. And I think our attitude ought to be similar to that. What can I give back to make our country great, because we've been given so much?
As we close tonight, Brad, could you leave us with a closing prayer, please?
Sure. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the fact that we live in such a free and great nation. I thank you that you created us to live in families, with husbands and wives and moms and dads and children and grandparents. And there are many things pulling at us today, Lord. And so I just pray for the families out there that you would give them courage to make the tough choices, to try to repair broken relationships, to try to be reconciled, fathers to children and fathers to mothers and husbands to wives. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Brad Snavely, you're making a difference. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spot.